Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with jazz saxophonist Andrew Rathbun and composer-performer Chris Biggs of the band Nodes on the 2022 CD, Incubated Dilemma Machine. This is the work of four musicians with what could be considered a pianoless jazz trio. There's the vital addition of the electronics, transforming everything into something that sounds great. We get into all of this and so much more. Enjoy.
Hey, guys, thanks for taking a minute out today. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Just by way of audio, making sure that we're clear with the audio here and who's who, if you two can introduce yourself and your role in this project, and then we can leap right into it.
I'm Chris Biggs. My role in Nodes was to perform the electronics in the studio, and then I kind of mixed and mastered the albums, and I made up some goofy titles.
And I'm Andrew Rathbun, and I played the saxophone on the project, collaborated with Chris in getting this off the ground, and provided some musical ideas and, you know, collaborated with Chris on musical direction on the project.
You know, I will say the one thing, one outgrowth of this COVID pandemic period was that musicians were experimenting and doing different things, finding voices or addendums to voices that they never had before. And the one thing I noticed was that there was a lot of musicians that were reaching out to this electronica kind of thing. And I know that this is a little bit of a new venture for you, Andrew. So collectively, talk to me a little bit about how COVID and that time may have helped you with this sound, how you arrived at it and developed it.
So for me, I had basically been a more traditional composer writing music for instruments and electronics, and not doing live electronic music performance, certainly not kind of free improv or Andrew wrote some stuff that we also played, and not doing any of that. But during COVID, with the kind of advancement in the ability for musicians to play together online, I just started playing with people online, and then Andrew and I started playing in my garage, and I was like, oh, this is super fun. I want to develop this electronic music system. And it gave me a huge period of time to do that when standard performances were not kind of an option.
Yeah, I mean, if there's an upside to COVID, that was it for me, just getting together with Chris in his garage outside and experimenting with interacting with the kind of sounds and textures that he was able to produce in real time. And for me, it was just a real eye-opening and, you know, boundary-destroying experience and figuring out how to interact with these sounds and textures, which I'd never really heard before. So, you know, we were speaking before we started about COVID. Well, that was one upside to COVID, and allowing us to do these kind of experiments.
You know, the one thing I noticed from my end of things, you know, talking to a lot of musicians, was that production skills went up. You know, you had Bandcamp Fridays, which was kind of a new thing, but we're still relatively new in this restructuring and re-coagulating as a community. And I'm wondering, from your perspectives, how do you see the jazz community coming back as a stronger organism, or what do you see that's been added to the musician or community that's going to make it better?
Well, I mean, you touched on something already, the increased fluency and competency with technology. I think a lot of people got much better at that during the pandemic. I mean, from my perspective, Joe, I think it's almost too early to tell. Like, I'm not exactly sure where things are headed. I think everyone's still just trying to get back into the swing of things and, you know, playing concerts that were canceled or they've been rescheduled. So they're just getting back to those things. So I'm not sure. We might not be able to have the perspective temporally at this point to figure out where it's all headed. But certainly, I think there has been a greater interface with technology, for sure.
Yeah, I can't speak to jazz specifically at all. I'm not sure how substantial the changes are. I think most of the skills were more practical rather than creative and outcome-based. And when you compare kind of what people picked up in terms of skill to like the popular music production industry, I still think that's the so far ahead kind of just general musicianship skill. I think it's going to be super nice just from online lessons and all that other stuff that occurred, that many, many more instrumentalists are just going to understand the basics of how you connect the microphone to a computer, how you interface your mic with a computer, how to send files. All that kind of stuff definitely got better, and I think that'll make our lives and collaborations easier. But in terms of broad outcomes, I have no idea.
I think it's like everything. I think we've all now, even though the world's opening up, I think we're all going through PTSD. I think that, you know, we're all readjusting to what was taken. So let's talk a little bit about this specific project and what you're hoping the listener gets from this, those that buy or download. What are you ultimately hoping they get from this project?
Well, like any creative endeavor, I hope it moves them in some way, shape, or form, or piques their interest, or they find it intriguing. I guess at a more zoomed-in level, the idea of taking traditional tenor saxophone trio, tenor bass drums, and then adding in this completely new layer of electronics and live processing, and again, this sort of otherworldly sounds and textures that Chris is able to produce in real time and then subsequently interact with us, which again forces us to play much differently than if it was just the three of us. That's what I hope people get from it. I mean, I don't think this sounds like anything. It doesn't sound like anything I've ever done, you know, in whatever 20 records that I've made. So I'm always interested in new ideas and new sounds and music that's surprising. And this is, to me, a very surprising project.
Yeah, I think it's really fun in terms of what all it brought together, because I think for all of us, it was experimental and new. And I think because it mixes, you know, free improv, some structured stuff, traditional jazz stuff, untraditional jazz stuff, and experimentation and things like that, that people from a variety of interests can get different things out of it. Like if somebody wants to go at it because it's a traditional tenor jazz trio, and then there's this electronic stuff that would be new for them. If somebody's more technical and they want to hear kind of how the electronics are operating and functioning and things like that, or what's making those sounds, but then they also get to explore maybe musical style and stuff that is unfamiliar or less familiar that they've had less interest in. So I think by bringing these disparate things together, hopefully populations with different interests will find new things in this project.
So even the album cover looks awfully futuristic. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, what the art means and just kind of the overall packaging of the project.
Yeah, so I made the album cover with the idea that nodes are just these interconnected kind of dots. So it's a algorithm that generates those types of images. And so I could have generate them, and so it's random, essentially, with some clustering in the center. And so the idea is like there's all these different connections between the material that they're all playing. There's connections between the material and what the electronics are doing. The electronics are doing data extraction from what they're playing and also generating its own stuff, and then they respond to that. So this kind of nodal idea and these connections that we're always exploring in different ways as we're playing kind of produce that idea of the art. And then Andrew had made some comment about art that he likes on covers as kind of like kind of more abstract pictures and nature stuff. So I took a bunch of those thinking that might be a thing. And then all the little circles are actually just those. So it's like a futuristic kind of looking cover with these nodal ideas, and it's algorithmic. But then there's this more kind of standard images that are on all the spheres.
Talk to me a little bit about now that, as we've established, you know, the world's opening up, talk to me about your itinerary, live shows, promoting this album, promoting projects, anything for you that's going to open up as we move forward.
We haven't done a ton of, you know, we haven't had a lot of time due to our busy teaching schedules to like book tons of gigs and promote the record. I mean, I've sent the record out to a bunch of critics and a bunch of people who I think might be interested in it. But we don't have any performances slated anytime soon, but we're hoping that we can find some avenues to perform some of this music live in the future.
You know, speaking of teaching, you know, I've been asking this question because I'm wondering, did the pandemic have an effect on the younger players, on the next crop of jazz musicians? And it seems like the opposite's happened. It seems like there's been more interest. People haven't gone away from it. There's been kind of a robust reaction to what we've gone through. What's been your take on it?
I guess everyone's take is really individual. You know, we're teaching at Western Michigan University, and I was only not teaching in person for the first, you know, March, April of the pandemic. So the following September and for that full school year, I did everything in person. So I didn't feel like there was a big fall off or drop off in my engagement with the students and what we were able to get done. I mean, obviously there was a lot less performance opportunity for them, but in terms of our individual meeting, it was just business as usual. So, and I can't explain why that was, or why we seemed to get lucky here and I was able to do that. But I'm really glad that I was, because I didn't really enjoy the online experience with my crew. I can't really speak to the larger jazz community. I mean, I'm glad to hear you say that, because that's really encouraging. But I guess I don't have my finger on that pulse, and I'm glad you have an optimistic view of it, because I was, you know, I'm unclear as to exactly which way that went.
Based on what you did, kind of branching out into more of an electronic sound, just a different venture, do you think that's going to be kind of something that might become a trend with younger players now that are out there, that they're going to be, there's more experimentation if COVID hadn't happened and there hadn't been this kind of bump in the road, so to speak? Are you noticing that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the students who come in now, there's just so much more music that they're interested in. And it's not just like, hey, can we check out Art Blakey's You Get To? Like, it's they're checking that out, and then they're checking out Thundercat. Like, there's a huge array of music that they're interested in, and it's all becoming part of their own aesthetic and what they're creating. So yeah, I just think that's it's inevitable, really. I don't think that they're doing it in the way that we're doing it. I don't think it's as abstract, but certainly it's part and parcel of what they're consuming, and then as a result, what their output is going to look like.
So, speaking of notes, talk to me a little bit about, you know, where people can pick this up, whether they want to buy it, stream it, anything else related to your world collectively in the project. Where can they go?
I mean, it's on every streaming service. They can buy it from the Koshkill Records Bandcamp site, which we obviously encourage people to do first and foremost before the streaming services. But if they want to listen to it on streaming services, they can. So those are the main outlets to check it out. This record label in Portugal, Koshkill, does not make any physical product. It's only a digital release, which makes more and more sense these days. Another label I record for sends me CDs, and I've given a few CDs out to folks, and they're like, oh, thanks, but I don't have a CD player. So this is just the, you know, where things are headed. And so we hope people will go and check it out and pick it up.
Gentlemen, thank you for taking a minute out today to talk about the project. Good luck with everything. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks, Joe. Always great to talk to you.
Thanks. Great to talk to you.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview. We give you a bit of insight into the finest players in New York, Kansas City, and spots all over the world, giving fans all that jazz. And thanks to both Andrew and Chris for their time, energy, and story. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino on the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com. And for everything Neon Jazz, go to the NeonJazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.